Hi, everybody. Ben Starr here with you with a positive mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we have a very special edition of The Positive Mind for several reasons. First of all, those of you out there, many of you who are big Positive Mind fans know that today is a very special day. For another reason, though, the reason I'm excited to be on the air today, in the studio today, is we have the return, at least for today, of our old friend, good buddy, Julian Joiello.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's great to have you back in the studio. We've missed you, Julian. I know you've been doing some exciting work.
It's been really cool, and I can kind of talk a little bit about it, and I'll just throw it out there, but I've been working on this Netflix series with Julie Andrews, Dame Julie Andrews, which has been really, really awesome. Been out in the middle of nowhere in Long Island for the past 2 months, so that's why I've been kind of MIA, but I'm really happy to be back here just for today, because it's really, really important to be here.
That's right.
In this chair again. But yeah, thanks so much for having me back, Ben and Kevin. Yeah.
Good to see you.
Yeah. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, once you're finished with that project, we'll have you back on more regularly.
That would be pretty cool.
You know, if you're not the, you know, famous actor flying all around the world by that point. But you know, it's great to have you back, Julian. And the real reason that we are here today having a sort of special memorial edition, if you want to call it that, of The Positive Mind, is that today marks the one-year anniversary of the passing of Armand DeMille.
A year.
1 year.
That's and a full
where
year.
Were you a year ago?
Yeah, I was...
I was at home getting a phone call from his son, Booker.
Right, and I was getting a phone call from you.
And yep. I was getting a phone call from you, too.
Yeah. It was weird. It was weird that night, because we didn't know... what was going to happen. I've been visiting for over a week and a half. I was there at least 12 hours a day, trying to stay overnight every now and then too, with him at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Was it Mount Sinai?
It was Lenox Hill.
Lenox Hill.
And he rallied, you know?
He did.
He had peaks and valleys.
I mean, to clarify for all those who might still sort of not know what happened.
I mean, there are a lot of people that I've spoken with weren't even aware that he's passed away, even now.
You know, and we play a lot of his stuff on this show because he was obviously so, so important to The Positive Mind and created it and did it for 35 years. And so his knowledge sort of is so valuable. So we constantly try to play it for you, but every now and then we get somebody saying, well, I just heard him on the radio, and it's, I'm sorry I had to do that for you, to you, but, you know, it's so great to be able to have the possibility to bring back so much of what he's done back to present day still. It's really cool that we get to have these archives.
Yeah, it's really, really valuable stuff. It should not be lost.
Absolutely.
It's great that we have it on the internet, but it should continue forever. Yes. His wisdom is applicable.
It'll constantly be here, and we'll continue bringing it back to you, if not myself, if Ben or Kevin or whoever, continues all of this. But I did want to clear up for those who may not know what totally happened. He was dealing with emphysema for quite a long time. For maybe upwards of 10 years,
It was COPD at the end, but it was emphysema to start.
Yes, and that kind of led to him having an oxygen tank on a lot of the time, and that made life kind of difficult, and they told him he wouldn't be around very long, and then boom, 10 more years. Really incredible. Just kind of shows the power that he had, the willpower that Armand had to stick around. And so he ended up in the hospital not for emphysema, but for pneumonia. There was a pneumonia in his lung, in the bottom of his lung, and due to a little bit of, from what I understand, a miscalculation in blood thinners, that were given.
Heparin, right?
Yeah, it was a heparin blood thinner. Was given to him too much of it at this hospital. It led to blood going into his lung, and it made it so difficult that they had quickly had to intubate him. And for those who don't know what intubation is when they insert a tube into your lung and kind of forces you to breathe oxygen. And once you've been intubated, it's very difficult to get off of it because your body becomes used to it and needs it to breathe. So for anybody, whether they have a lot of willpower or not, it's a very difficult process, especially for somebody who has emphysema. So all of this is happening, and Armand's on this intubation for a couple days, and then finally they get it out, but it's been so long that it's difficult. It's suffering, and Armand's sitting there, and he sort of tells his confidants, who, you know, us three in the room right here, that he didn't really feel like he wanted to put that willpower into forcing himself to stay in this hospital bed for, you know, an indefinite, perhaps, amount of time. And it kind of changed from this sad realization that he didn't really want to live the normal way anymore to a celebration of his life and an excitement for what came after death.
It was a very powerful experience.
It was very, very powerful. I mean, I've told the story of what happened with me in the hospital room. About him, you know, making sure that I had my feelings, and he did that for all of you too. And it was just such a magical experience to see a man, you know, so powerful and so strong willpower say, "I choose to move on, and I want to celebrate with these people who are here with me."
He had made his peace with it, and I think he was really ready. And I've never experienced anything like that.
Yeah.
I've never witnessed anything like that. For me, it was a real learning experience.
Yeah.
And a real source of, I don't know, strength and inspiration. I mean, that's seems so cliche to say that, but
I know, but it really was.
The prognosis was that he was going to have to live with the BiPAP machine indefinitely.
Right.
So at least 6 months. When they took him off the BiPAP machine, his blood oxygen level went down, which was normally at 94, 96, went down to 70.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And so then he would have to have this BiPAP on his mouth while he's sleeping, while he's awake, and while he's talking.
Right.
And what kind of quality of life can you have?
And you could kind of hear over the last several years of Armand's life, as far as the radio show is concerned, you could hear it in his voice that he was struggling.
Sure.
Struggling for breath, struggling just physically.
You know, and we're gonna tell stories today I wanted to tell one story about just the will of him to come to work every day. I would come here 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, and he would muscle his way down the hallway to his office and see clients. I mean, he was devoted to his work.
He was so, so devoted. He was like, he would come in just for that, just for the radio show, and then obviously he would say, "I am tired. I need to get out of here." But it was like the kind of energy that also came when the radio show started was so awesome to see when I was working with him for those three and a half years before. We would go live, and it would like turn on. I mean, his eyes would light up, his energy would fly out into the microphone, and it was really, really just awesome.
It was absolutely his big passion, his great passion.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the main reason he stuck around so long was for the radio and for those clients that really needed him.
One of those last days, I remember there was maybe a rotation of about, I would say, what do you think, about a dozen people. A dozen of the same kind of characters you'd see there at the hospital when he was, you know, on his way out.
Right.
Including the three of us, but also other family and friends of his. It was about the same 12 or 13 people constantly rotating in and out. Mm-hmm. But there was a night where I think, Julian, it was you and me, and I think Aura might have been there.
Mm-hmm.
But he was writing to us on the notepad because he was having trouble speaking. And one of the things he told us was, you know, keep the show going. Keep the positive mind going.
Yeah.
And that's part of what's motivated us to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Even when he could sort of speak a tiny bit, he would gasp out sort of the positive mind. You've got to keep it going. You've got to do this for the next show. And then when I'm gone, you're going to do a show like this. And when the fun drive comes, you got to do a show like this. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing? Why are you even wasting this breath?
It was unbelievable.
It was incredible.
How much he cared about WBAI, about this radio show, about his listeners. Because at the end of the day, it was always about the listeners.
Yeah.
And that's you out there. So, you know, rest assured that this man, he worked tirelessly. Even, I mean, in the final days of his life, he was thinking about this show and WBAI.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
and positive psychology.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wanted positive psychology to continue, not just the positive mind, but he didn't believe really in depression and anxiety as a lifelong terminal illness. He believed in positive psychology and staying positive.
Absolutely.
And Kevin, working to stay positive.
Kevin, on that note, why don't we hear from you what you're sort of, we wanted to bring to you a little bit of what Armand was to us and what kind of maybe a story that represents something. And you were saying that you wanted to talk about, why don't we do yours?
Sure. Well, I have a theme more than a story, and probably a couple of things come under it. And of course, you know, most of it is watching him struggle through this at the end for the last 3 years. I came to Armand about 5 years ago and asked him to evaluate me for someone to become a counselor. And I told him my story. And he said, why don't you come and work for me? I mean, without batting an eye, he sized me up. He looked at me. He asked me my credentials, asked me my background. And he said, you know what? I'm going to take you on. And I was floored. Armand was a guy I'd been listening to for 20 years. I never met him. And I came in and was really like lost and needed guidance. And he said, nope. You're the guy. You're going to take on my clients. You're going to help me here. So for me, the main thing with Armand is generosity. I remember once being in his office and there was a piece of blue glass on his desk. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, one of these beautiful items Armand had all around him. And I said, wow, that would be great at the bottom of a swimming pool. You know, it was this serrated blue like tile. And at the end of the day, I go into my mailbox, and the piece of glass is there in my mailbox, and he says, for your pool. You know, and there are countless stories to me. I mean, when you'd go to his house, he would have this opulence ready to celebrate at any moment, break out like a huge bottle of wine that was worth $300.
Oh, yeah, and there was always his, you know, we used to talk about one of his little mottos, and one of his things was to make sure you never show up without a gift.
Yeah.
To with somebody, and I mean the kind of gifts that I have from him, I'm just like, I've got enough mementos, don't I? Like,
yeah, and you know, he often left you with a gift.
Yeah.
As you were leaving, he would give you a gift.
Yeah, yeah.
I have in my backyard his metal eagle hanging from my tree that he gave me last April. And he said, "Here, I want some," but he would give you stuff to leave, and it would be wrapped. You know, he'd be wrapping it while you're talking to him, and all of a sudden, he says, "That's for you."
Well, it was a kind of thoughtfulness that he made obvious by, you know, that kind of giving. He really was able to show how much and how interested he was in your psyche and what made you happy and what mattered to you.
You didn't even know what he was thinking about when he was doing it. I mean, he'd be wrapping a gift as he's talking to you about something else, and then it would be this surprise at the end of it,
right.
The conversation. That's right. For you. So it's like he could think many things at once. And then the other thing for me about Armand is, you know, the way he celebrated life. Even though he was struggling, I remember taking him down to the lung doctor down on 45th Street in his car. And we stopped off and had some soup. And, you know, he's really breathing heavy and he's without his oxygen and really struggling. And we ordered soup and he's standing there and he's drinking, he's having the soup and he's like, carrots are thick, carrots are too crisp, the celery is just right, you know, enough pepper, you know, just the right amount of pepper. You know, he was evaluating everything he did, you know, in whatever compromised state he was in. He was just always, I use the word probing, he was always probing reality.
He was a real connoisseur. I mean, not just, and when it came to food, yeah, he was definitely a gourmet. He appreciated all kinds of food, but
foods and
wine. He was a connoisseur of life. I mean, he was really good, like you said. Yeah,
dancing, culture, just everything.
It was everything was kind of this grand sensory experience with Armand, where it was always about, you know, the experience, understanding, and the sensory aspect of everything. How something smelled. Right? Like a flower, the smell of a flower, how something looked, how something sounded, how something felt. I mean, and he was just unbelievable with his senses.
Well, you know, in Gestalt therapy, there is, and there's a reason for this. He was a big fan of Fritz Perls, the starter of Gestalt therapy. And one of the big practices of Gestalt therapy is to probe reality, pay attention to your sensations. Mm-hmm. You know, be here now is the phrase. And when I think about Armand, I think here was a guy who was here now all the time. He wasn't forecasting for the future. He wasn't obsessing or thinking about the past. He was here now. And these sensations are really just practice to stay here. And so when you were with him, you were in the midst of a teacher and a learner at the same time. He was learning and keeping himself alert, and he was teaching at the same time. So
and that was one of my favorite things he used to say when you'd explain something to him, you know, instead of saying, yeah, I get it, or okay, he would just look at you and say, okay, I'm learning.
Right.
I'm learning.
Even when callers would call in, you know, we'd complain, or somebody would complain and say, okay, we're learning. You tell us what it is.
Right.
So he was a grown man who was willing to learn at every moment.
And like Julian said, there are always these little Armand lessons, right? These little life lessons that he was really great at imparting. Like Julian, you mentioned the one of always show up with something. Mm. You know, never go anywhere empty-handed, even if you show up with a small thing.
Yeah.
And even if you're not, you know, not even necessarily in a situation where you're being hosted, but just going to pay someone a visit, right? Just show up with something. I kind of internalized that from Armand, and I would start, you know, when I would come in to work, like bring him something, just something small.
Right. Well, because you grow these relationships where you give and take and you give and take, and there's an equal kind of thing happening. I would do the same thing with Armand for the 3 or 4 years where I was going to his house, and we would produce stuff out of his house, especially for the first year, right after Hurricane Sandy when we first started working together. First year was after the blackout, and WBAI was underwater, and so we had to do these pre-recorded programs. So we would spend like 12 hours together, and every time we got there, it was like I would bring something cool that I wanted him to try, to taste, to think about, and it would be vice versa. And it was always a great back and forth. And we both sort of had a shelf of things that we got from each other that represented what we had learned. You know what I mean? It was really cool. But I actually wanted to go off of what you were saying, Kevin, about his sort of ability to do multiple things at once.
Yeah.
For my kind of, since we only have so much time, my kind of overall theme or lesson or something that kind of really resonates with me from Armand was he had this awareness of three different like dimensions at once. He had the past, the present, and the future. All at once, he's thinking about all these things very actively. Mm. He's got, and not like in the, oh God, well, regrets and future, like, oh, what am I going to do? Am I ready for this? It's not like, not in a nervous way, but in a very like, very like magical kind of way. And there's a couple moments that I recall that remind me of that. And one of them is actually a good friend of mine started teaching him drum lessons. And this is like his first experience with Armand. So he's, you know, getting mind blown. Mm. And he comes up to the radio station. He was telling me about it just afterwards because we met up right afterwards. And it was about a month before he passed away. So it was pretty close. And there was a level of, I'm sure you guys remember, there was a level of his awareness of the end coming soon kind of thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
And he would do this thing with me whenever I was producing with him. Oh, you know, if I'm not here tomorrow, this is what you need to do. Julian, I'm training you to do this radio show, just so you know. The second we started working together, he was like, this is coming at some point very soon, and I need you to be ready, and I'm training you to do that. Mm. And then when Ben joined in, same thing. He was like, you guys are going to be taking the show.
There was that day that he got mad at us. Because Julian, you and I were both late.
And he's like, how are you supposed to run this show?
And he said, don't you guys understand that I'm training you to do this after I'm gone?
I mean, it was, that was one way he was kind of preparing. But this thing, so my friend Charlie, he's a good friend, he was on the show once, and he was teaching him drums. And so he comes up here to help him, they're going to go buy a drum set. And I don't know if you guys know, but Armand was a drummer, and he was kind of getting back into it. And they're in a car service. On the way out, I don't think I've ever told this story on here. They're on a car service on the way out, and it's silent. And you know, my friend's 20; he's just hanging out with Armand DeMille in the car, the voice. He's sitting there, and he's got a presence, you know. And my friend looks over at him, and Armand looks at him, and he says, "Have you ever thought or wondered if the caterpillar knows that it's going to become a butterfly?" And so Armand had this sort of obsession. I'm hearing this from my friend Charlie, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Armand loves butterflies. He's got butterfly wings all over his house and these tessellations. And my friend's just sort of like, well, I don't know. Probably not. And then there's just silence for a couple minutes. And then Armand looks at him again and says, "I think I'm about to become a butterfly."
Wow.
And this is, you know, weeks before he passed away. And there's just, it's like this kind of awareness of both that exact moment, the present moment, but also what's coming and the excitement for what's coming and the awareness of this 75 years of life that he's had all at once in that just little conversation. Yeah. You know, it was amazing how he could do that. And it was constantly like that. I mean, sometimes he would look me right in the eyes and say something like, "Are you sure that's what you want?" You know, and I'd be like, "I don't know. Is it? Is there something I don't know? You know, is there something coming?" And he's like, "Maybe there is." You know, and I remember when we were in the hospital, and he was on his deathbed. It was this awareness of what was coming this next week, and he was living in the moment with that awareness, not worrying about it, not regretting the past, but just being aware of it. And his awareness of that actually helped him and helped other people live very much in the moment.
Yeah. The amazing
and that
thing,
was what was so important. That was his big thing, was to be very much in the moment. And if you're, you know, don't be on your cell phone. Don't be, you know, if you're tasting a wine, taste that wine. And if you're watching a film, watch that film. I mean,
right.
Watch it.
Yeah.
And experience it. And you could tell that every taste, every sensory experience, like you were saying, Ben, before, was so valuable and so important that you had to cherish it.
When you talk about his awareness in the hospital in his final days on his deathbed, what was always incredible to me looking back on it is how much more he accepted it than the people around him.
Right.
I mean, from the beginning, from the first day that he went into the hospital, I was in denial.
I was saying,
he'll be fine. You know, he lived right around the corner from the hospital anyway. I said, you know, you'll be home, you know, in a few days, you'll be fine. I mean, I was still visiting and still concerned, but it didn't seem to me like any, like a possibility even. He just seemed, he had this strength and this presence that was so lively and vivacious that it seemed unthinkable that, you know, he would pass away.
And even suffering, I mean, the naturalness of his voice, even though he was in pain, you know, and knew it was coming. I mean, he just sounded like a good old refreshed young Armand.
Yeah, I mean, and it was like, I remember the things he wanted wasn't like, you know, come here and have these last words with me. He was like, "I want some watermelon.
Get me a root
beer." He was like, "Get me a root beer. These are these things that I love." And it's like, I know I'm gonna miss these wherever I'm going. You know what I mean? And I want to make sure I hold on to this stuff. But Ben, before we get to the break, I really want to hear from you about your experiences. And
well, I would echo a lot of what you both have said so far, especially Kevin, how you just described him as just the incredible generosity that Armand had. And that was always the case in my experience with him. I mean,
absolutely.
Starting from the very beginning, when I was, you know, I was working another job, another radio related job. And I just had, you know, I had been listening to the show like you, Kevin. I came in as a listener and I'd been listening for probably 8 years, something like that, eight or 9 years. And I sent him my resume because he would like to, you know, he'd announce his email on the show. And I told him, you know, the sort of work that I had been doing and my qualifications. And I said, you know, I don't know if you're hiring, but I would love to help you with the show in any way that you need. Here's what I'm able to do technically. Here's what I know how to do production-wise. I never, ever expected that he would ask me to join him on the air.
Yeah.
I remember him asking, he said, "Hey, this guy, send me this email." He showed it to me, and I was like, who's this guy? Ben Starr? Would he make that name up? You know? And he seemed so excited, and he was like, "I don't know. What, do we need help, Julian?" You know, he's like, "Do we need help? Do you need somebody else helping you engineer?" And I was sitting there, and I was like, "Well, I don't know. I'm kind of doing my job pretty well." And then he was like, "Well, what do you think? He seems like he knows what he's doing, and he's coming in." And I said, "Why not? Let's do it. You know, let's have somebody else in here." And he's like, "Yeah, I think you could use a partner."
And as it happened, you were about to go on vacation.
I was.
Which was a crazy timing of it all. And everything surrounding Armand always had this feeling like there was a magic to it. And I remember getting an email back from him within 2 hours. It just said, "Come to my office tomorrow." Mm. Or no, it said, "Call my office." That's what it said. It said, "Call my office." I called the office right away. I spoke with Jamie at the time. And she said, "Yeah, Armand would like you to come in tomorrow." And I said, "Tomorrow? Well, of course, I'll be there. You know, no questions asked." And I show up, and I think when I walked in the room, Julian, you were already there. I think you were sitting at his desk, across the desk from him. And Armand said, "Ben, how you doing?" And I said, "I'm pretty good, Armand, I'm pretty good." And he responded in a way that no one has ever responded to me. And he said, "Yeah, we'll see." Just like that. Which goes back to, you know, Julian, you were talking about some of the more quizzical things that Armand used to say, and just how he played with language.
It was like, I wonder what he was thinking, "We'll see." Like, what was he thinking of?
Right. I said, "I'm doing well." And he said, "Yeah, we'll see." Mm-hmm. Like, we'll see how well you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if he just had this way about him. And I don't know if that was... that was just his way of being silly or provocative or what it was. But, you know, the generosity, Kevin, that you mentioned, he gave me a shot right away, and he believed in me.
Yeah.
And the belief that he showed in me made me believe in myself as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, he picked the right guy. I mean, you have a great radio voice. I mean, when I have clients come in and they listen to the show, they say, "Wow, Ben is such a great, great radio voice." So, I mean, he knew what he was doing.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Yeah. But I think one other story has to be said, you know, for listeners who really want to know what Armand was doing at the end, how he was feeling at the end of his life. Remember his 75th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And he made me go into the kitchen and get out a carton of milk and empty the milk into the sink.
He said, "Oh, this is his favorite thing."
Yeah. And he had a bowl, and I never knew about this.
Yeah.
So he had a bowl of water, and he put the
empty milk carton
in the milk, and he lit the milk carton, and everybody was quiet. Most of us had never seen this.
What is he doing?
There's going to be a fire in this place, you know.
Some people were kind of bugging out.
Yeah, this is a Manhattan apartment, and you know, we're all sitting there in real quiet, real silence. 15 people, and we're all sitting around. We're like, "Where is this going?" And he just said, "This is how I feel. You know, if you really want to know how I feel, this is how I feel. This is how I'm living." So he was a guy who was like burning with life, but also with pain too. I mean, I think it was a dual message.
Yeah. Absolutely. His connection with both the light and the dark of things, it was like, I mean, constant.
Yeah.
Constant awareness. And we're actually coming to our break right now, but this has been so, so interesting and talking with you guys, and so glad to be back here.
Good to have you back.
We're going to play a little bit of music for you. You guys may know this one if you've listened to The Positive Mind, but here we go, and we'll be right here after the break.
Thank you. me crying after you've gone. No use denying you'll feel blue, you'll feel sad, you'll miss the bestest pal that you've ever had. There'll come a time, and I don't forget it, there'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine, and you'll want me only after you've gone, after you've gone away.
Loudon Wainwright here on WBAI with After You've Gone, selection from Julian from Armand's Music Library. Couldn't be more aptly titled.
Yes.
You are tuned into an anniversary edition of The Positive Mind here on WBAI. I'm Ben Starr in the studio with Julian Joyella once again and Kevin O'Donohue of the DeMille Center here. And I want to talk to Kevin a little bit because Kevin, you know, while Julian and I have worked hard to, you know, continue Armand's legacy on the radio, and you've been a part of some of that with us. You've been doing the heavy lifting, keeping the legacy alive, you know, here at the center. And I think it's incredible the work that you've done.
Thanks.
What, you know, tell me what's
well,
going
into it. You know, the work has to continue. So I feel honored to be here and to, you know, to be on the lease and to have the lease for 10 years and intend fully to keep the lease and keep it going for 10 years and more. I think this work is really, really valuable. So I feel privileged to be here, and it's uncanny that I'm in this position. Like I said, I came to Armand 5 years ago. You know, for a guy to be in my position after 5 years in this field is pretty slim. So it's, you know, I'm really honored to be it. It's a struggle. And it should be a struggle. It's great. I'm learning every day. So, you know, Armand was my mentor and my supervisor every Monday for 3 years, and he wanted me to learn his stuff.
Yeah, what kind of, just give an introduction of sort of what this stuff is.
Mostly the stuff was intense feeling work, intense feeling process, which was rooted in primal therapy with Erwin Janoff. And Armand wanted me to be his primal therapist here at the center. And that's what I became.
Fantastic.
And he showed me all the steps to help people really get to the bottom emotionally of things. You know, therapy is often a very intellectual process. And it's he always believed that that's a waste, that really you want to get the client to feel.
Yeah, because the thoughts get in the way.
The thoughts get in the way. And, you know, some clients need those thoughts and use those thoughts so that you don't get too close to them. So he had me take clients right away into an intense feeling process. I said, look, we're not going to talk. We're going to go right to, you know, right to pains that you don't even know you have. And I would report to Armand. And he said, you did this right. You didn't do that right. You could have done more of this. You know, you know, Kevin, say it to me. Yeah. Act like you're the client and I'm the therapist. And we would reenact these things. And he was indefatigable. He would just never stop. He'd just more, give me more, tell me more, say more. So that's one process. And then, you know, the DeMille Center used to be called the DeMille Center for Reconnective Psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So he taught me to help clients reconnect to an early part of themselves.
You know? That's what people still kind of come here for, you know?
It is what people come here for. And so, you know, this is when we do the talking part. We help people We guide people to get in touch with the younger parts of themselves that, you know, are wounded and really need to come out. And so there's that. So there's Gestalt therapy. There's intense feeling therapy. There's Enneagram work. There's
the men's group. The men's group is
still happening,
right? The
men's group is still here. We still have a men's group.
I was lucky enough that Armand had actually invited me to be in the men's group while he was still running it.
Wasn't it great?
It was amazing. And, you know, at the time, I wasn't able to afford it. And he told me, well, I'll waive the fee for you, but you have to pay something. Not because I want your money, but you have to be invested on some level.
I remember that, yeah.
You know, so he had me pay a very nominal fee. Yeah. And when I mean nominal, I mean like a few bucks for a month.
It was like what was in your wallet at that moment.
Yeah,
right.
and he would have me join the men's group, which, you know, Kevin, you were a part of it too at that time.
Yeah, I lead the group now on Monday nights.
It was unbelievable, the experience of being in that group. Yeah. And just, you know, some of the ways that I was able to work through things in that setting with Armand and with you, and just, you know, things that I had to let go of that I was able to do.
And Armand loved men, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Armand did a whole series on men. He loved women too, but he loved men.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
let me tell you a little bit something about
the
other therapists here. Do we have time to talk a little bit
quickly
about
before
the therapists?
We move on to our next
So we have 12 therapists, you know, who deal with a range of issues. We have addictions, EMDR, trauma work, touch therapy.
Well, slow down.
Okay.
EMR?
EMDR.
What is that?
Which is eye movement, desensitization and the R regulation. And it's often for people who have suffered with trauma. It uses a laser, a red laser light, and you use your eyes to follow it on a wall. And people have had, you know, it has great success in helping people who've suffered with trauma. We have a trauma EMDR specialist here, addictions, LGBTQ couples. We have a Buddhist therapist, an opioid addiction specialist.
Yeah.
Psychoanalysis. Wow. I mean, come on.
This is a center
we
for
have
a reason,
12
right.
different therapists and psychiatrists, and we also have a psychiatric nurse. So I don't know if that covers it, but we have plenty of stuff, and it's all on the website.
Yeah, thepositivemind.com, where you can also find our archives if you're always anybody's wondering online. But we're going to move on to this last little sort of segment for you, where we're going to bring a couple of clips of Armand speaking, and one that kind of resonates with each of us. So, Ben, why don't we start with yours first?
Yeah.
Here we go.
What is resiliency? You know, in physics, it's the ability of a material to quickly return to its original form after being bent, stretched, or twisted. That's resiliency, you know? Think about a rubber band. Very resilient. Think about an oak tree. Not very resilient. Think about a cedar. Very resilient. Because they bend, and they'll bend all the way over, and they'll come back to their shape. So down in hurricane places, you know, it's the big sturdy trees that break over because they're not very resilient. They're very staunch. They could kind of stand up there to a lot of pressures. In psychology, psychological resistance, it's a similar concept. It's the ability of people to return to normal by bouncing back from the ups and downs of life. How do you bounce back? How well do you bounce back? Now, there are four primary factors that help you determine whether or not you will resil your resiliency. The first is attitude. Resilient people consistently choose an optimistic attitude in life, meaning a positive mind, not just meaning blindly optimistic, but meaning a positive mind. An optimistic attitude is one of hopeful expectations for positive results in almost every endeavor, whatever you're doing. Life is naturally stressful, and resilient people know how to take purposeful action to control life. And they do control life. They avoid whatever stress they can by saying no and setting limits to things that are unnecessarily stressful. Like if somebody comes over to you and says to you, here's a 50-pound suitcase. Will you hold this on your head for a few minutes? You know, you say no. There are other people I know who would say, oh, okay. See, resilient people know how to limit the stresses. And they know how to limit it, and they know if I'm going to go through stress, it's going to be a stress that I choose. They also practice unwinding from stress, which is very important. The non-resilient people don't unwind. They get stressful, and they stay that way. So most people who are resilient are people who know how to unwind from stress.
And if you're just joining us, we're remembering Armand DeMille on the one-year anniversary of his death. I'm Ben Starr here in the studio with Julian Joiello and Kevin O'Donohue. The three of us each chose a sample of Armand's on-air work to share with you today. And here's Kevin's pick.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about a heavy subject here, grief. The idea of it is that I want you not to be grieving a complicated grief. I want to introduce words into our language like death. Instead of passed on, left, made a transition, you know, and died. My friend Richie died. My friend Richie was my closest friend. And he died of leukemia suddenly. It made no sense that Richie, the health nut, Richie, the guy who worked out every day, Richie, the guy who wouldn't touch a piece of meat, got leukemia and died. Made no sense to me whatsoever. I got so angry at Richard. So angry at him for being healthy and leaving, and leaving me as his best friend, that it saved me. I had another time when I had two people die simultaneously, one best friend and my mother. And I remember I was smart enough to grieve my mother. But I was grieving her, and I was letting myself cry. I was feeling sad. In fact, I was at her casket, and I was crying. I was young. And my uncle came along, and he said, "Now, Armand, you're going to have to take care of everybody." And I turned over and looked at him, and I said, "You take care of everybody. I'm crying. This is your sister. Shouldn't you be crying, too?" But then following that, a week later, my other best friend died in an accident. And everybody came to me and said, "You know, we have to make arrangements." And I said, "I'm sorry. I can't do it." He had called this priest. "Tell him to just repeat what I just did for my mother." And they just had a repeat performance. But going through it with people is rough. As people get older, they go through it with more and more people. Then there comes this issue of facing your own death. Of facing it and looking at it and saying, "Okay, here it comes." There was a man I knew who was living next door to me. He was dying, and nobody talked to him about his death. Nobody talked to him. So I went over and said, he was a good friend. And I went over to his house, and everybody was talking about, "You're going to get better, you're going to get better." But you looked at him, and he was on his way out. And I said to him, "Richard, how do you feel about dying?" And he was aghast, I should say such a thing. I said, "I think you're dying, Richie. Is there anything you feel about it? Is there anything you want to know? Is there anything you want me to take care of?" This was a different Richard. Two Richards died, both good friends. Never name anybody Richard. No, it was just those two. Anyway, Richard turned to me, and he talked to me about it. Then his son, who heard what I said, got so angry at me. "How could you talk to Dad about his dying?" But later, Dad said it was the biggest relief to have been able to speak about it. Speaking about death, your own death, is fabulous. You know, when everybody tells you not to mention it, that's a good thing. But when people have someone who dies, and they have people like you two, Linda and Nicole, who they could deal with to get help, that's amazing. It's an amazing thing. People get deeply depressed. They experience the world as gray. They get stuck in a pace of pain and grief. Here are the symptoms of complicated grief. You miss your loved one all the time. You have difficulty accepting that they're gone. You're avoiding things that remind you that your loved one is gone. You have frequent memories, thoughts, or images. And it's constant. It's over and over again. Well, this is a new year, my friends. Maybe it's time to do something about this, to come out into the daylight, to find the way. If you can't deal with it yourself, let us find you some of the resources that'll help you with it.
And that was Armand speaking and bringing you this stuff because it's just important for you to hear his voice and remind you kind of what was going on. And if you want to hear any more of the original Positive Mind archives, you can go to thepositivemind.com and search up a keyword, a date, and find just thousands of programs on there with Armand. And one of the great things about Armand was that this show, ironically... I spent, and a lot of us spent, our grieving time after he passed away being taken care of and being taken care of by his own voice after he passed away was just such a crazy thing to experience. I don't think anybody else has experienced this kind of thing, but this next clip is one that we played at his memorial. It's a beautiful piece. Just a couple of minutes, and it's from a program called Sense of Belonging, and a sense of belonging, and it's about the grieving process. And I remember listening to this, and we all did several times, I'm sure, because of its beauty and because of the way it just sort of applied to dealing with losing Armand. So here we go.
Now, of course, there are those who say, I ache so much to belong to something that I'm going to hate everything. And this way, I will make sure nobody touches my heart. I will make sure nobody even gets near me. I met a man earlier today who said to me, you know, I just want to be, in effect, he's Teflon. He's safe because nobody ever gets so close to him that they could hurt him. See, part of what belonging to something is that you can get damaged, that you could feel pain. Let me tell you the story about the geese up in Canada. I think I've told you before. They wondered why the geese had the sound of crying and why they sounded just like human tears, human crying when they saw all these geese flying. And they studied them a little closer. You know the geese when they're flying going south, they wah, wah, sounds like human crying sometimes. And they studied them closely and they found out when the geese are in formation, which they do to create downdrafts so that they could fly further distances, see, that's why they're in formation, because the wings create a downdraft for the wing and back of it, and that's why they fly. When one goose falls out of formation, when it goes out, you got a big hole in the formation, right? And what the geese do is they cry. They set up this loud cry to find out, where is that goose? Get back here in formation. What they want to know is, did that goose die, and is he gone, or is he coming back? If he's gone, we reshape the formation. But if not, our cries will carry out to him so he could hear us. And it's what I believe mourning is about. That's what I think grieving is about. I think grieving is about crying to find out if the person who died is ever going to come back to you. And so you're crying just like the geese and wondering, are you going to come back? Or am I going to have to reshape my formation? Which we eventually do. And when you're in a crowd of people and you belong to a family where somebody dies, you mourn, you grieve, you cry, waiting. Are they going to come back? And when they don't come back, you reshape, you regroup. But the group is always a little different. I think you're grateful that you belong to such a group. Any group that you belong to will create pain because some part of that group will eventually go away, and there'll be a pain, and you got to be willing to feel that pain. And because you're willing to feel the pain, it's part of what belonging is about. Even belonging to someone you love is about being willing to face the pain if something goes wrong.
That was unbelievable. It's almost like he's counseling us.
Yep.
Through the grief of his own passing.
There's really important stuff. I would say save this one for yourself, because any time I've lost anybody or anything, this clip has just been the way that it makes sense. It makes sense to me.
We lost our lead goose.
Yeah, the formation has changed.
Yeah.
At least the formation has changed. And we're coming to the end of our program today, The Positive Mind, this special edition of The Positive Mind. the anniversary of Armand's passing. Thank you for joining us. For myself, Julian Joiello, and Ben Starr, and Kevin O'Donohue, and thank you for having me back in the studio.
Hey, good to see you.
I know, man. I left you guys for a month and a half, but
yeah, it's good to see you.
I'm glad to be back here. And thank you to all our listeners, and I hope you sort of heard this show today and allowed it to permeate and bring you back, because those feelings need to be felt, as Armand always said. So if you're having any feelings, if you're having any thoughts about what Armand was like or what he was to you, please post it on our Facebook group or send an email to positivemind@wbai.org, or just listen to some archives for yourself on thepositivemind.com. Thank you so much, and this has been WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City in The Positive Mind. Some beautiful, beautiful music. One for Daddy-O by Cannonball Adderley.
Thank you.